Ditch the clowns on the left.
And the jokers on the right.
And join Michael Smirkanish right here in the middle.
This is the Smirkanish Podcast for Independent Minds.
She is arguably the most prominent DNA detective on the planet. In fact, my next guest was profiled in the New York Times Magazine last year, and this is the way the piece began. On any given day, Cece Moore's inbox is flooded with strangers asking her to solve the mysteries of life and death. And on a good day, she can. Over the past year, working from anonymous DNA samples, Moore helped identify the suspect in a murder by tracking old migration patterns from Poland to North Jersey. Solved an assault case in which female DNA at the crime scene turned out to have been left not by the usual sort of explicable coincidence, but by an actual female perpetrator, and made a key discovery in a murder investigation when the gravestone of an apparently childless woman was found to bear the inscription, Mother. Some of these she knocked out in just a few frenzied days. This is Cece Moore. Hey, Cece, welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back to my program.
Oh, I really appreciate you inviting me.
Will you remind everybody exactly how did this become your area of expertise? What drew you in? What circumstances?
Well, that's a bit of a long story, but it really was started by a group of citizen scientists. This didn't come from traditional science or academia. I don't have a science degree. I became interested through being interested in my own family history as a hobbyist, and then also having a separate interest in DNA. So when I learned that those two things could be combined to help solve mysteries, both personal and historical, and then eventually working with law enforcement, you know, that is just something that really intrigued me, that there would be the ability to solve these mysteries through our own DNA.
And I think that there are many, I'll say, of us. I'm not a crime solver, but I'm totally into ancestry and totally into the use of DNA for ancestry. Ancestry, 23andMe. I just sent off a DNA sample. Maybe I should have asked you before I did, to MyHeritage. Because overseas, I'm finding that the mapping from MyHeritage is really, that literally is the name of it. I'm not using that as an expression. But it seems like for European sleuthing, they've got better contacts than what goes on here domestically. How important was the Golden State Killer case in terms of bringing the level of consciousness of what you and others do to, you know, better awareness?
You know, we had been building this incredible tool for human identification under the radar, and it was mostly being used for own personal mysteries and family mysteries. And so most people were not aware of the fact that Pandora was really coming out of the box. Consumer DNA testing meant that all of these secrets could be revealed through our collective DNA. And so the Golden State Killer case was when the public really first learned of the power of genetic genealogy. That was the first time that most people in the world learned that we had built this tool and that it had already been solving many mysteries behind the scenes.
And in the end, this guy, the serial rapist and murderer, was a former police officer.
Right. Yeah, so investigative genetic genealogy is what we call it now. And that is
investigative genetic genealogy.
Right. So that's specifically when we're using this tool and these databases to help law enforcement identify violent criminals.
When I make a decision, as I have for both 23andMe and MyHeritage, to provide a DNA sample in my case because I want to investigate my heritage, my ancestry, discover other relatives, I am making a decision not only for myself, I am making a decision for my family, right?
That's correct. But both of those companies have terms of service that bar law enforcement's use. So I'm not allowed to use them to identify violent criminals. The same is true for Ancestry DNA. We are limited to the two smallest databases, which are GEDmatch and Family Tree DNA. And so that's only a couple million people that we're able to compare against for violent criminals. However, if you've tested your DNA in those other companies' databases, you might learn that you have a very close relative that you didn't know about. You might learn that one of your parents put a child up for adoption that you weren't aware of. You also might discover that your own family tree isn't quite what you thought, and maybe you have what we call a misattributed paternity, where your father is not your biological father. He's only your social father. And so you are making decisions for the rest of your family in that regard. You may end up revealing one of your family members' secrets without their consent.
How does one end up in the two smaller databases that CC Moore can get access to?
If you've tested your DNA at any of these databases, you have access to what's called your raw DNA file. You can download that to your computer, and then you can upload it to Family Tree DNA or GEDmatch, and you can opt into law enforcement matching. And that allows
Why would someone do that?
Well, it is to identify the most violent criminals, the ones that have typically gotten away with these types of crimes for years or decades. Most people are supportive of that idea. So if you believe that if your second or third cousin has perpetrated this type of crime, that they need to be caught, then you may be supportive of this idea.
Use the case of the Golden State Killer and tell me, how was that cracked with DNA? What database ultimately was tapped, and how did it expose him?
The GEDmatch database and the Family Tree DNA databases were used in that case. There was actually a Los Angeles Times article that revealed they did use MyHeritage as well. Now, that is before the terms of service explicitly forbid that. Hmm. What happened was his DNA, this unknown rapist and killer's DNA, was entered into those databases, was uploaded into them. At that time, surreptitiously, and the companies were not aware of it, and it was compared against all of the people that were in those databases. From that, you get a list of people who share DNA with that unknown man. Now, typically, we're working with very distant cousins, second, third, fourth cousins, and beyond. And so these are not close relatives, and that was true in that case as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. I was just going to say, because of that case, all of the companies changed their terms of service to determine whether that was going to be allowed or not. And so at that point, that's when it, you know, zeroed in on just those GEDmatch and Family Tree DNA databases for those comparisons.
In other words, up until that time, if I were CC Moore and I had reason to suspect someone was involved in a crime for which DNA existed, if I could get a relative of theirs voluntarily to give me a sample, then perhaps I could close the case.
Right, but you didn't. Yeah, I mean, that is true. That's still true. So if I'm working a case of an unknown serial killer and the law enforcement agency says, you know, we did have this one suspect we never ruled out because we couldn't get his DNA, maybe he passed away, I can always suggest to them, you can reach out to one of his relatives and see if they're willing to submit that DNA and we can compare it. So the type of advanced technology we're using, we don't have to have that person. We can compare against a relative, and I could tell you, yes, this is the first cousin of your suspect.
Got it. Let me ask the question this way. I've never been charged with a crime. I have voluntarily given to both MyHeritage and Ancestry my DNA sample. Do you think you could track me?
Yes. Now,
how?
There are, because it's very likely that you have some third cousins in the databases that I have access to. And that's really all I need. Most people think I use one person's DNA to compare against. I'm actually comparing against these 2 million people, and I get a list of relatives. So I would probably have a couple hundred or a couple thousand relatives of yours who would share DNA with you. I'm going to look at those top ones, those closest ones, build their family trees, and we all have unique family trees except for your full siblings. So if I can piece back together your family tree little by little, I reverse engineer your identity based on who you're sharing DNA with and their family trees.
Damn, you're good. Don't ever come after me, okay?
Well, I hope to do a lot of good. I hope to make society a safer place and to protect the vulnerable people in society. But let me make a point. I'm only using people's DNA that have consented to this use, and I believe strongly in that.
So let me ask this question. Recognizing that the GEDmatch and FamilyTree DNA databases are nothing like Ancestry and MyHeritage, and you've been very clear in saying that they are now, the latter two, off limits because of the terms of service, can you express to me, maybe in percentage terms or something similar, what part of American society do you think, via GEDmatch and FamilyTree, you can get access to?
You know, it's a great question, and it really depends on population group. If you are primarily Caucasian and you have deep roots in the United States, then I can identify you. If you are an immigrant or have come from a family of more recent immigrants, you're going to be much more difficult to identify, and that is because of the representation in the databases I'm using. They are primarily made up of people who have deep roots in the U.S. who are white. And the reason that I can identify that group of people is just because those are the people that have been participating in genetic genealogy and direct-to-consumer DNA testing the most. And because I'm limited to these smaller databases, those are the ones that are I'm most successful at identifying. If I could get crime scene DNA into Ancestry DNA or 23andMe, I could identify many, many, many more people more successfully. But we still do have a high level of success just with those very two small databases, and we can still identify people from those other population groups, but it takes months or years in many of those cases.
I imagine there's been a lot of litigation where law enforcement does attempt to serve a subpoena on 23andMe or MyHeritage.
There's actually been very little of that. Now,
really?
Because MyHeritage is based in Israel, law enforcement really can't. So
Okay. They're
protected in that way. Ancestry and 23andMe, you know, they're really powerful companies. They have built from these tiny databases to these huge databases, and they're both billion-dollar-plus companies, so they have really strong legal teams, and they have vowed to protect their customers' DNA. And so that has meant there really hasn't been a lot of effort to get into those databases at this point. I know there was some interest in doing so, but law enforcement was actually trying to work with the management at those companies to see if there was a way to do it, and they have been rebuffed, to my knowledge.
Cece Moore, I could speak to you for hours. Thank you again for being so gracious with your time. I buried the lead. This is what caused me to reach out for you. The San Francisco case. San Francisco case where you have a victim of sexual assault now suing San Francisco and saying, you were going to use the DNA that I voluntarily surrendered when I was a victim to now come back and prosecute me for an alleged burglary. San Francisco ultimately did not prosecute her. But I wanted to ask you about the propriety of that, and how common is it that someone's a victim of crime, surrenders DNA that now remains in a database?
You know, I wasn't even aware that that was possible. That was a big shock to me. Now, I'm an expert in my niche area, and I'm not really an expert on how often that might happen. I do know that California has now passed a law against that, and it's waiting for the governor's signature, which I think is a good thing, because we cannot scare people off from reporting these types of violent crimes. That's the exact opposite of what I'm working toward. I want people to report violent crimes. I want violent criminals off of our streets. So we cannot make people feel that if they do that, they are somehow going to be charged with a crime, right? We have to have victims come forward. We have to prioritize victims of violent crime and get those violent criminals off the street. So again, I emphasize that I believe people have the right to decide how their own DNA is used, unless you are a violent criminal. But if you are a victim of crime, we need to protect those people, and we have to encourage them to come forward. There's already way too many women and probably men who have been raped and have not come forward for various reasons. And I fear that stories like this will discourage people from reporting those types of crimes.
You said unless you are a violent criminal, meaning what? If you're convicted of a violent crime, C.C. Moore thinks then we should have your DNA?
Right, and we do through the law enforcement databases, that, like the CODIS database. Now, I don't have access to that for genetic genealogy. It's a totally different type of DNA testing. But there are laws, and I think most people agree, that if you've been convicted of a violent crime, we need to have your DNA on file so we can compare that against crime scene DNA. The cases I work are the ones where they could not match that sample to anybody else. And we do need to identify those people in order to protect society and protect the most violent, protect the most vulnerable people of our
right.
society.
So where is that line? Like, where is the level of violence that I must perpetrate where you would think, okay, Michael, we need your DNA in the database because you're a problem. We want to make sure if you do it again, we'll know it was you.
So there are very clear terms of service at the databases I'm allowed to use, and the Department of Justice has passed guidelines on how investigative genetic genealogy is allowed to be used. We are only allowed to use it for the most violent crimes, for rape, for murder, for very violent assaults. Now, we also do use investigative genetic genealogy to identify Jane and John Doe's, people that have been have died without their identification. Often they are also victims of violent crime. And so that's really what we're focused on.
Hey, a final question, and then I'll let you go. And thank you again for being so gracious with your time. What are you working on? Anything you can share? Obviously, I'm not looking for identity, but any kind of case that right now you're wrapped up into?
Well, I am always working on multiple cases of violent crime. Many, many cases from the 70s, 80s, people that have stayed under the radar for many decades, have not ended up in the law enforcement databases somehow, that still need to pay for these crimes. I'm also working a lot on a lot of these Jane and John Doe cases. One thing that's really difficult is identifying people from those other population groups that I mentioned. And so, you know, we need more people that are willing to participate, to put their DNA in these databases so we can identify these individuals whose families are still waiting to hear what happened to them. So, you know, my focus is split. I do want to identify these violent criminals, but I also want to bring names back to these 40,000 or so individuals who have died in the United States without identification. That's really important to me.
Cece, I'll let you go after I tell you this. My folks, my mother is living, are from the coal regions of Pennsylvania, Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And 60 years ago, like in the early 60s, there was a schoolgirl, I want to say
right.
9 years old,
right.
who never... Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do.
Keep
going. Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. 9 years. I mean, this is like out of a movie. Sadly, it's true. But I want to say a 9-year-old girl on her way to Catholic school. She's going early because she's got a gift for the nun. Does this not sound like Hollywood so far? She never makes it to school. They find her that afternoon in a strip mine. She's been sexually assaulted. She's dead. Unsolved case for 60 years. And it was solved a couple of months ago, maybe within the last year for sure. And it was because of DNA. And like a C.C. Moore, who is a young guy and a college student,
yeah,
was the
Eric
one.
Schubert.
You know him.
Well, I certainly know of him. So it's pretty often that we will start a case at Paragon, which is the company I work with, and then Eric will become involved in it. So that was a case that we actually processed the DNA. And I looked at it, and I said, boy, this is going to be really, really tough. It's going to take a lot of time. And the agency didn't prioritize it immediately because of my assessment. But Eric heard about it and was really interested in donating his time to work on it. And I think it took him a year or 2 years of working on that case and focusing
and
on it.
And they exhumed a body. And it was the perpetrator. Like, they were able to conclude.
Yeah.
And the family, some family members, sadly not the parents of the 9-year-old girl, but I want to say, like, a brother and sister were still alive and able at least to receive that level of closure.
Yeah, Eric's a boy wonder. You know, he's doing amazing work at a very young age. It's really impressive.
Well,
and it's encouraging. You know, we'll need a whole young group of people that learn how to do what I do that can help solve, you know, eventually, hopefully hundreds of thousands of violent crimes.
Amen. You're the best. Yeah. Thank you
Thank you.
Thank you
so
much.
I'm so excited to hear that you're interested in your own heritage, your own DNA. That's fantastic.
Oh, I won't take you down that rabbit hole, but I was in Poland 3 or 4 months ago and came to the ruins of the village where my great-grandfather walked out in the 1890s. So
wow.
Maybe we'll have a separate conversation about
that.
Well,
yeah, I mean, that's how I got pulled into this, too, is just, you know, being interested in my own family history and then testing my family's DNA, and it ended up somewhere I never could have imagined.
I can tell. Thank you, CeCe Moore.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Smirconish Podcast from SiriusXM. Listen to Michael live weekdays on POTUS, SiriusXM channel 124, and on the SXM app.
CeCe Moore, ladies and gentlemen. TC, you wanted to tell me something?
Her. I just pulled up an article about the case you were just talking about from Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
CNN writes...
My Aunt Rose, give her a shout out, because she saved the newspaper.
Wow.
She saved the standard speaker for me because she knew I would enjoy the story.
So this was from February of this year.
Right.
Nearly 58 years ago, Maurice, M-A-R-I-S-E, I want to give her proper credit, her name, Chivarella, was murdered and her body left in a hole in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. She was only 9 years old. State police worked tirelessly over the years but were unable to identify her killer until now. Thanks to DNA and genealogy tracking, authorities announced Thursday they have solved her case. Pennsylvania State Police were founded in 1905, so over half of our existence we've investigated this case, said Pennsylvania State Police Lieutenant Devin Brutowski during Thursday's news conference. And you're right, Michael, the genealogist.
Like an 18-year-old?
20, yeah.
20.
Eric Schubert in 2020 contacted the state police offering to help free of charge.
Right.
He was only 18 at the time, so it took him 2 years. He had assisted other police departments on several cold cases. He began genealogical work on the family tree of our match, and very shortly we were provided names of relatives who were scattered throughout the country, and everyone cooperated. All of her family cooperated.
And just like CeCe was explaining,
yep,
when you get a relative, yep, to cooperate, that's how you can get the DNA in the database.
Absolutely incredible. And you're right, the murderer died in 1980, but they were able to identify him. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the issue first of all, there's a lot of fodder there already. If you want to call me on this whole subject, hey, how did she describe herself? An investigative genetic genealogist.
Yes.
That's what it
is.
That's
the field.
If you want to respond to anything you've just heard, do it. But on that San Francisco case, which we've talked about previously, I totally understand where a woman is a victim of rape and a sexual assault. I guess it should be more particular. And then a few years later, the DNA sample that she surrendered when she was a victim is now going to be used against her as a burglar. That doesn't sound right. But what if the facts were a little different? Let's act like we're in law school. What if it were murder? What if she'd surrendered her DNA because she was a victim? They kept it in the system. Now they figure out, hey, years later, she murdered someone. In that case, how would you feel? Andy, you are in Detroit wondering why aren't people more concerned that CeCe's got access to all this DNA? I thought she had access to more than she has, although you heard when I said, do you think I'm in your system? I've never been charged with a crime. I've not voluntarily given you anything. And she said, yeah, I do. If you're, you know, Caucasian, Eastern European, we've got you.
Yeah, that's concerning. I mean, I don't know if I sound like a conspiracy theorist or a crackhead or something, but that scared the ever-living shit out of me. The fact that she could pick you up out of a lineup without you even being in the system is amazing.
Well, no, I am
doing
in the system.
For altruistic reasons.
I am in the system, but it's not voluntarily. I have given my DNA to Ancestry and MyHeritage. I've not given it to GEDmatch or Family Tree, which is where she's limited in her work.
Gotcha. Now, I remember being in the military when they told us that we should not that we could not, but that we should not submit to that, submit to like ancestry tests, like home take home tests and stuff like that, for this specific reason. And so I don't know if that's just drawn like some crazy conspiracy in my head or something, but that just terrifies me that there's a database out there that is so easily accessible. And
you know,
I don't think you and me have access to that, but I mean, just the fact that database even exists, am I going overboard here?
I don't know. I'm going to see what other callers say as a result. This is the Henrietta Lacks case, TC. These are the cells that just multiply and multiply and multiply and go everywhere, right? Isn't that a good analogy for what's going on here?
It's incredible.
Reno, you're in Tampa. That sounds funny. Hello, Reno.
Hey, how are you doing, Michael?
Good.
So this could be a long story, but I'm going to make it short. Okay. My family's been involved in traditional genealogy for decades and found out that we go back to the Plymouth Colony, third boat, et cetera, et cetera. But we had an interesting situation where my aunt and sister and a couple others contributed their DNA to 23andMe and found out that the pregnant wife of our second generation here in Plymouth Colony actually married one of the Mayflower, or married the illegitimate mother, if you will, of a Mayflower, let's just say a sperm donor.
Okay, got it.
so our ancestry is a little bit different than we thought it was, but it was very interesting to find out.
But if you go back that far, I would be surprised if there weren't some, you know, some curves in the road, so to speak.
Because definitely so.
Everybody, I mean, I have one of those in my own family tree. One of those, I will not say too much, but a similar story where there were some discoveries made. Be prepared for that when you go down this road. But what about the answer to my question, gang? Okay, in the case of the sexually assaulted woman who years later herself commits a murder, is it better? You know that old adage, is it better that 12 men go free? Is it better that she goes free? Or should it be used to prosecute her?
This is the Smirconish Podcast from SiriusXM. Listen to Michael live weekdays on POTUS, SiriusXM channel 124, and on the SXM app.
Eric, you're in North Carolina. Hi.
Hey. Hey. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I have a 28-year-old daughter that found me 2 years ago through Ancestry, or one, you know, some service like Ancestry. She actually, she connected with my son, who had also taken a test, contacted him on Facebook, and, you know, found me as a result. And you know, now we have a relationship, and I couldn't be happier.
What are the circumstances? What happened 28 years ago, besides the obvious?
It was a one-night stand in Myrtle Beach, and I had no idea.
Wow.
The entire time. And,
holy smokes.
And her mother didn't know who the father was either, so there was no clue.
Okay, so she emerges in your life and says, "You are my father."
She sent a really sweet message just saying, you know, hey, I hope this isn't too weird, but here, you know, here's the circumstances, here's what I found, you know, do you think you might know my mother? And when she described, you know, details, location, time, I said, oh, I'm pretty sure I know who your mother is. Let's
get
a
test,
and we did.
You remember that night in Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, I did.
So is her mother still alive?
Oh, yeah. We spoke after that. I mean, briefly, her mother is, you know, relocated, married with kids since then. But my daughter and I I have other kids too. And, you know, she was welcomed into the fold.
Are you married now?
I'm no longer married. No.
Okay. Because my next question would be, how does this sit with your current wife? Had you been in contact
Actually, my ex-wife was the first person that I told. I felt like I owed her that. Now, this wasn't a case of infidelity, but I still felt like I owed her that.
Had you been in touch with your daughter's mother in the last 28 years?
No, it was a one-night stand.
Like, did you even know her before that night?
No.
Interesting. Wow.
I was young.
Yeah, I totally get it. Wow, that is really why. Well, good. I mean, good for you that you responded in the way that you responded, because I know other instances where this type of thing has happened and people have not had your attitude.
Oh, no, I totally get that. And I actually told her once we had the paternity test, look, I couldn't be happier, but I would totally understand if you said, hey, you know, thanks for the closure, but I'm good. But that's not how it turns out.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting question. Yeah. Would you want to know?
I don't think I'd heard anyone mention like some other good that can come out of this. And so I wanted to give that example.
Listen, I think solving 50-year-old murders is a lot of good. You know, people are like the people. Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate you sharing that story. I wish you good things. How about the, I want to say, brother and sister in the Schiavella case, the 9-year-old girl in Hazleton, Pennsylvania? The parents died without that case having been closed. I'm reasonably confident, it's been a number of months since I really read in on it, but I'm reasonably confident in telling you that there was like a brother and sister. There were siblings who at least did get the closure of knowing that was the guy. He was dead. That was the guy who killed our sister. Plucked her off the street on her way to school with a gift for a nun. Never made it to school and ends up in a strip mine that afternoon. And you know, 60 years go by. And it was the kind of case that every parent would tell their, you remember what happened. Be careful. Where are you going? Because it really did happen that one time. And they solved it. 8-year-old kid solves it.
Hear more of Michael Smerconish on SiriusXM's POTUS, Channel 124.
Live weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon East, or anytime on the SXM app.
Connect with Michael on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and at Smerconish.com.
Michael Smerconish, for Independent Minds.